Don. Welcome back to Story Structure. We're here for episode 56.
Is that where the title story?
Oh, you're right. But today, we are going to be talking about story structure, so it's on my mind.
Yes, we were talking about story structure. I totally think we need to synchronize some kind of, like, head dance to our opening music and, you know, put that up on our social media as bonus content for our loyal people who want to see us, like, Night at the Roxbury over here.
Well, yeah, because nobody knows that that's what we're doing, because usually there's a title slide over our heads while the music is going on. But yes, Don and I can always see each other. We've switched software, but now we can see each other. And I always dance.
Yes.
Especially during that little last part. Yeah.
It's just so happy.
It's very cheery.
Very cheery. Okay, so how are you?
I'm good. I'm cold. I'm tired of being cold. Although it's only January, so I guess I need to sort of buckle down for a bit.
Yeah, I think you've got a long ride coming.
Ooh.
I'm just tired of the up and down.
Yeah, like we've had a lot of that too.
We have like a 45 degree temperature drop in one day here, and I really just need it to make up its mind.
I think we better just prepare for wild temperature swings and horrible storms and cataclysmic weather events until we get this whole, you know, climate change thing figured out, because it's just sort of where we're living.
So for those of you who have tuned in and for the Optimist podcast,
so, I mean, all
yeah, no, I
things are good though. How is your life? Aside from the weather.
It's good. It is good.
Okay.
I'm ready for all of the new things for the new year. It's going to be good.
I today got tickets to Hamilton, which I still have not seen. I know everyone else in the world has seen it.
Nice.
I'm going to take my mom for her birthday. I'm very excited about it.
Oh, that will be fun. I have not seen Hamilton.
Well,
I'm one of the few people left.
We're not seeing it till April, so
so you've got some time. I do know all of the songs because my children were absolutely obsessed with it, and so we used to have to listen to it in the car. So I do know all of the songs, but I haven't actually seen it.
I'm not sure I could even identify a Hamilton tune. I know they were a big deal, but my kids were too young to care.
Well, I take that back. I did see it on Disney Plus. Because they did release it. So I guess I have seen it. I just haven't seen it live.
Well, so I'm wondering if I should watch it on Disney Plus or if that will ruin it.
I mean, I don't know. I think it was good. I liked it.
Yeah. Because if it's like Cats, I mean, I've seen that 90 times and it's great every time. But I don't know. I like live shows. I'll probably just wait. Anyway, this is not the Hamilton podcast.
No, but we're talking about story structure, and Hamilton has a story structure, I'm sure. We'll figure that out.
We'll get back to that in April. But for today, we're going back to the beginning to follow up on our last episode where we talked about how to start. We're going to talk a little bit about, okay, you've got your idea. You know it's a good idea. You can build a story around it. Now, what do you do? Where do you go from here?
Right. And so I think when you start with that, we have to give a brief definition because we live in this world. So we assume people already know what we're talking about. But I think we need to give a brief definition of a pantser versus a plotter.
That's a good idea. Well, so a plotter, I think that's kind of obvious. A plotter is anyone who lays out the plot in some fashion. It could be a super detailed outline. It could be some kind of a software program where they enter in details about what's going to happen when. It could be as little, you know, note cards that you organize, or even just, you know, it's a plan of some kind, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say that makes you a plotter if you do any sort of planning. A pantser, I mean, by its definition, is just flying by the seat of your pants. No plans, just going where the wind takes you. I would argue, and people can correct me if they don't agree with this, that most people fall somewhere in between on that continuum.
Yes.
Not all the way here or all the way here. There are definitely people who are here, but most people are going to be in between.
Yes, I definitely think that plantsers are a thing.
Yeah.
Plotting pantsers, I think those are the majority. I think you see more of those than you do people who are really strongly one way or really strongly the other.
When I hear a lot of people using Joe Penn's term discovery, I have used it to describe myself. And what I mean by that, and I think that's what Mel Harlow says she is too. Like, I know enough about the story and certain beats and plot points, and we'll talk about what those are, to know that it's going in the right direction. But I like to figure it out as I go along. I like to discover the story.
And I think that's very valid. I've also heard people talk about using like the flashlight method like when you have a flashlight, you can see to the end of the beam.
Right.
And so I write as far as I can see, and then I go from there. So I have a plan to the end of my flashlight or the end of my headlights or whatever.
Well, I guess, yeah, I kind of do that too, because every morning I have like maybe a sentence about what's going to happen. Like I always open Scrivener before I go to bed. So it's up on my big screen when I sit down at 5 o'clock in the morning, and it's an empty page with the character's name, the chapter heading. And then over on the right side in the little notes area, it'll have like one or maybe two sentences. Like, he needs to talk to her about this and the dog shows up, or just something like that. So I'm like, okay, those are the things I need to get in here. And then I figure out what happens.
So we're going to be talking about how you lay those out and kind of creating like a scaffolding for your story rather than just completely just starting to build your house from scratch with a hammer and nails. So I think one thing that we need to also define, because again, we live in this world, we assume people know what we're talking about. Let's define what a beat is.
Okay. Well, so a beat is, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, the same thing as a plot point. I use them interchangeably, at least. Okay. I didn't know what beats were until someone told me about, is it Blake Snyder's?
Mm-hmm. Save the Cat.
Yeah. Which is a screenwriting formula or strategy that involves hitting certain beats at a certain point in your story. So each beat is a turning point or a plot point or something happens at this point.
It's an event.
That, yes, there's the good word I was looking for. So there are lots of versions of, they call them beat sheets, where you can sort of outline without really outlining. Like, all you're doing is identifying what these beats are. And Jamie Gold, if you go to Jamie Gold's website, has a whole bunch of different beat sheets for different genres that are genre specific. Mm-hmm. And if you download the Excel version, when you type in, like, it'll have a spot title and then word count, you put in how many words you think you're going to try to get to, like, okay, this will probably be 75,000. It then tells you for plot point one, you should be between 10 and 15,000 words. And then for plot point two, like, it'll tell you about when in your book you should be hitting each beat, which is super helpful.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit about story structure and how those blend together, because when you think about story, we naturally expect things to happen at a certain time. Like, if you've grown up listening to stories, if you've grown up watching movies, if you read a lot, your brain, there's a pattern to it, and you pick up on that. And that's why sometimes things can feel slow. Or that's why sometimes you'll feel like something feels rushed, because the pattern isn't set up the way you expect it to be.
Right.
So when we're talking about setting up these scaffolding things, there's advantages and disadvantages. And the advantages would be...
Let's talk more about that. Well, so the advantage is that you know where you're going. So if I am... You know, I've just introduced my hero and my heroine, and now, or hell, let's talk about something besides romance for a change. I've just shown the dead body on the floor and had my amateur sleuth stumble into the room and get herself entrenched into this situation to the point where it's clear she's going to have to solve this murder. Now I know that, okay, my next point, I have to have her meet her sidekick. That's what happens next, and it's going to happen in the next chapter probably. So I know that everything between this point where she's just discovered this body and that point is, you know, driving in that direction. So it keeps you on track if you sort of know where you're heading. So I'd say that's the advantage. Some people will write out, this happens, this happens, this happens. Like, mm-hmm. You need it to be almost like much more scaffolding than I could work with.
The only disadvantage I've seen to that is that some people get very locked into that plan. And you were talking about being a discovery writer. Sometimes amazing things pop up while you're in the middle of writing a scene. And so I think even if you are a plotter and you've laid out all your beats, if something amazing pops up, you need to be flexible to accepting that and changing the story a little bit if it's going to make your story that much better.
Right. Well, as a beginning writer, like we're going to focus totally on you haven't written a whole bunch of books before. Because I was going to say, for someone who knows that their process, like those ideas are not good ideas and they need to stick to their plan. But it takes a lot of experience to figure that out about yourself. So, yes, I think you're right. In the beginning, open yourself up to that discovery and see if that's something that works for you. Maybe those ideas are always bad ideas for you and you'll learn that.
Well, and I've worked with clients where those ideas were not bad ideas. I've worked with clients where we've laid out a whole story and then I get this email that says, okay, but, and we talked about this a little bit in our previous episode, okay, but what if this happened?
Right.
And well, then you have this idea of, oh, no, that would be great.
And that's the story of the Delancey Stewart beat sheet. Every time I pulled out a beat sheet, I have then gone back, like discovered it a year later after the book's already been out and whatever's going on, and been like, I didn't write that story. Like the first thing happened, but then everything else is not what I wrote here. What was I even thinking? Like, it's almost part of my process to think through what could happen. And then I decide something else without even realizing that I'm doing it.
Well, and I think that's part of the sorting through ideas. Like we talked about in the previous episode too, of I have these ideas. And as you're starting to lay them out on the beat sheets and starting to figure out what actually has the strong conflict, what actually has the attention drawing stakes, then as you start to write it, sometimes your brain's like, you know what would be even stronger? Now, what you got to be careful about that is what we call the plot bunnies. When, like you were talking about, your brain's like, you know what would be even stronger? And then this bunny starts bouncing off in another direction. Don't chase the bunny.
Yeah. Because then all of a sudden you might be writing a whole different book.
Right.
But my problem is that I don't really, like some people write very detailed character sheets and they think up their character's entire backstory and all, you know, the wound, and they know that when he was five, you know, his pet bunny popped away and I don't know, whatever. But so I don't do all of that. I know a lot about the character, but I don't know how they react in every situation. And I don't know their little quirky stuff that comes up as I'm writing and as I figure out who they are. So sometimes the beat sheet, I'll have them do something, you know, plot point six or whatever, that it just is totally out of character and they would never have done that. And I don't go back and fix the beat sheet. I just write the book.
Right. Because nobody's checking it.
Right.
Nobody's going to take the beat sheet and check it against your final work and make sure they match.
Yeah.
And I think when we're talking about these beat sheets and talking about story structure, it's important to address the idea of you will hear people criticize that because they say it makes the writing look formulaic.
I don't think that that's true. I think if you adhere so strongly to a beat sheet that every single one of your books has this thing happen at exactly the same point, I mean, a formula can only be discerned after having sort of looked at a lot of data, right? So if you've only written one book, it's not going to be formulaic because you have no formula. If you've written six books and they're all exactly the same, okay, yeah. But I think by the time you're getting to the sixth book, you have started refining your process to where that's not going to be an issue.
And I think having a formula is not necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
Because we did address this in one of our previous episodes, and I remember I wrote a blog post on it that related it to tacos because I was hungry at the time.
Yes.
But you have a basic recipe, and then you dress that up however you want to dress it up. And it's just like when my kids were little and my husband would tell them bedtime stories, every single one of his bedtime stories was some version of the Three Little Pigs. But it was like the Three Little Transformers, the Three Little My Little Ponies, and so he would adjust it to whatever the kids were interested in at the time, and he would alternate it depending on which kid he was talking to. But he still had the basic idea of you have these three entities that go out into the world, and this is what happens to them, and this happens to this pig, and this happens to that pig, and that this pig's the one that survives, basically. And so I don't think a formula is necessarily a bad thing if you look at it in terms of it being a scaffolding, the foundation for you, and then you make it pretty and build off of that.
Well, and especially if your formula is successful, if you've written a book that people like, then why would you change your structure? Write another book like that. They like that book.
Well, and romance gets a bad rap sometimes because it's always, always accused of just... it's the same story being told over and over. And that's okay. We like that.
Yeah. If readers didn't want to hear the same story over and over in slightly different ways, they would stop buying the books and we would all get that message and quit doing it. But I'm right. Not gonna apologize for that.
No. Well, and it's like the idea of, and I wish I could remember who said this, but I heard somebody say once that every romance novel is the story of How I Met Your Mother. Because they all end up, the goal is that they end up together at the end.
Right.
But we do that in real life all the time, too. If we ask people, like, how did you meet? You know, what did y'all do when you were dating? And so you want to hear that story again and again and again. And because everybody's is a little different.
Mm-hmm.
So my point on that is that we're going to be talking about these structures. We're going to be talking about beat sheets. We're going to be talking about the signposts that you want to hit. And all of that is okay because it's setting up your story for success.
Right. Well, so let's talk about maybe, I think we've kind of gotten into how detailed you might want to be. And I think that's going to be an individual decision based on your personality and your strengths. And so what are some universal story structure beats? Like what mystery, romance, whatever it is, they all have certain things, right? So what are some...
So general story structure is more my thing, and then romance story structure is definitely more specific. You're more experienced with that. So I'm going to take the general story structure. And usually when I talk to clients and we're laying out what they're going to write, we talk about a couple of very, very broad story structure beats. And they kind of vary depending on genre. Like sometimes thriller is different than what's expected in a suspense or what would be expected in a fantasy, but they all kind of follow the same basic pattern. So you have your hook, and I'm going to go through these kind of quickly because we have previous episodes where I think we hit every one of these really in depth.
I think we have an episode for each one of them.
Yes, I think we did too. So I'm going to hit the high points. So the hook is what draws the reader into the story. The hook is what the reader picks up. That's usually the very beginning, first lines, first paragraphs. That's what makes the reader think, okay, I want to know more about this story.
Yes.
Then you have the inciting incident, and that's what draws the characters into the story. So whatever has happened that drew the reader in, the characters could completely walk away at that point. Like aliens are landing on the front yard. The character before the inciting incident could just shut their door and go hide in their closet. But something happens. The aliens landed on the front yard and they kidnapped their dog. So now I have to go save Fifi. I can't just go hide in the closet.
Right.
And then you have the midpoint shift, which is one of my favorite things because you can always, like, I can tell, because I've been doing this for a while, I can tell in movies when everything's about to change. And it's like, oh, we're halfway through now. Because your midpoint is almost always where something dramatic happens. And in things like sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, suspense, those kind of genres, it's usually when you figure out whatever you thought was happening was really not happening.
And isn't it where the hero or whoever we're reading about can't go back to the way things were? Like something has changed so dramatically that they no longer could just go back to the way things were at the beginning of the book.
Right. Whatever world they came from is gone now.
Right.
And so if we have aliens landing on the front yard and they have kidnapped Fifi and I've got to rescue Fifi. I've got to rescue Fifi. My midpoint shift might be that we find out that Fifi is actually an alien lord that's been hiding in my poodle's body. And now I've got to stop her evil plan to take over the state of Texas. Completely making this up as I go, did not have this example planned in advance, but I'm sticking with it.
Yeah.
And so the midpoint's where everything changes.
Right.
And how is that going to shift? And what is that shift going to look like? How are they going from, if I could just fix this, everything would go back to normal, to, like you said, normal is gone. What am I going to do in my new world here? And then you always have a moment where everything is completely, the world has ended. We're not going to be able to go on. Fifi has now actually taken control of the brains of all the other dogs in the state, and all the dogs are holding their owners hostage.
Good.
Wanting more begging strips. I don't know. But you have a moment where bad is going to win. In a thriller, this is usually where somebody very important gets killed, or this is the moment where the bad guy actually manages to kidnap the girl, or they've arrested somebody, but the amateur sleuth knows that's the wrong person, but she's going to have to live with putting the wrong guy in jail, that kind of thing. And then in romance, this is usually the grand gesture, and I'm going to let you talk about that whenever you get to that point. In other genres, you have what I refer to as the big boss battle.
And
yes.
Okay.
All is lost. Something usually happens in between there that gets your hero out of the moment of self-pity and is basically, you got to go save the world here. And so this would be where my character goes and takes down Fifi the poodle. And there's the epic battle and everything gets resolved. Or if you're writing like a trilogy or whatever, it opens up to whatever the next problem's going to be, but something gets resolved. And then you have the ending image. And this is the moment in a movie right before the credits roll of, if I have taken down Fifi, all the dog, the ending image is that all the dogs are back to being sweet protectors now. And the world has gone on as it's supposed to.
And you get a new puppy or something.
And you get a new puppy. Yes.
Okay. So yeah. So for romance, I mean, they're super similar. Big differences are that you may be writing dual beats, because sometimes if you're writing dual POV and you have a hero and a heroine, the inciting may be one that they're both involved in, but then sometimes some of the beats will happen on both sides for the hero and the heroine. The important ones, and because a romance is about the characters together, the important ones will happen at the same time for both of them. So the midpoint shift, for instance, is usually I took a class from Alexander Sokoloff, who talked about screenwriting and how it applies to romance, or actually just writing. And she called it sex at 60, because in a 120-minute movie, if it's a romantic movie, usually there's some physical consummation at the midpoint. So in my head, I'm always like, sex at 60, not the age, but the time.
Which is a whole other genre.
And the all is lost moment in romance, I think you guys probably know, is the dark moment. It's everything has been so wonderful, and then we break up for whatever reason, and we both are going to go on with our lives without the other. So that's the black moment. We're both being stupid.
When I'm working with romance authors, I always call that the Taylor Swift moment. The we are never, ever, ever getting back together moment.
Yeah.
Because that's the they can't possibly make this work moment.
Right. And instead of the big boss battle, usually there's a grand gesture. So, and usually both characters need to go, they call it talk to the goddess. So there's some sage-like character who gives them the hard truth, who tells them the real thing, and who makes them think. It's the catalyst moment where they're like, oh, I've been such a fool. And then they go and, you know, make it all right again. And that's the grand gesture, usually involving something big and over the top, if you're reading one of my books, at least, because I love those. And then the ending image for romance is usually called, if you like Gwen Hayes's version, it's called What Wholehearted Looks Like. Gwen Hayes wrote Romancing the Beat, which is a great book about beats in romance specifically. And the wholehearted moment is sort of like, okay, you've resolved all the conflict. Your romance readers have stuck with you through all of this pain and angst, and now you're going to give them the cake. You're going to give them the happy. This is what you came here for. Here's all the good feelings. Everybody's happy. So it's always like, you know, if there was a proposal, sometimes this is a wedding. Or if there was a wedding, then sometimes this is the sitting on the couch or having the in-laws over for a barbecue kind of, you know, happy family image.
It's showing what happened past that moment.
Yes, not to be confused with an epilogue, which is often similar. And honestly, yeah, they should be confused because a lot of the same stuff will happen in an epilogue that people use for this last scene. So sometimes you'll break it up, like maybe the proposal is the grand gesture, and then there's a happy, all the friends together moment, and then the epilogue is actually the wedding, or who knows.
Yeah. And so when you're looking at, we talked about Jamie Gold's beat sheets, which are amazing. Blake Snyder's Save the Cat website also has beat sheets for his or for movies, but you can, it gives you an idea of how they're put together, how to structure them, that kind of thing. And so we talked about, so you've laid out these beats, you look at what you think is going to work, you're flexible to change it if you, if that's going to improve your story, but you got to be sure you evaluate if you're flexible to change it or not. Any other tips and tricks for the beat sheets?
No, but I think you have to keep in mind that the beat sheet is not an outline. It doesn't fill in all the detail. So you still are left with, if you're going to be a plotter, you're still going to be left with some holes that you need to fill in, like how do characters get from point A to point B? Like point A is they bump into each other on the street just to make Dawn mad, and point B, she hates that when characters literally bump into each other. So that's, the inciting incident. And then point B, where they find out that they're both competing for the same position at the financial firm or whatever. In between those two points, stuff happens. Like they both
Right.
go off to their jobs or talk to their mom or do whatever they do. So you still have to figure out all of that stuff. So there's a lot of layering that goes on after you've built your beats.
Well, and for the people who are brand new to this, because I think that comes more natural as you get more experience as a writer, if you're brand new to this, the stuff that happens in the middle there is feeding to the next beat.
Right.
It's not if you have that they physically collided, which should not happen, but they physically collided on the street and she spilled her coffee all over her shirt,
Oh, no.
then what's going to happen in between that moment and the moment where she finds out she's competing with this job is she's going to have to go home to change clothes. And while she's changing clothes, she's going to have a conversation with her roommate about how much she hates this dude and the fact that she doesn't have time for romance in her life because she has to get this job.
Right.
So those, it's, you're funneling towards the next beat.
And those are your opportunities to put in backstory, to highlight character traits, to explain motivation, to start setting up conflict. So that stuff is the stuff that is hard, I think, and that gets people overwhelmed and scared because they know they have to do all of that, but they aren't sure how to do it. And we have tips for that. But this
Yes.
is not that episode.
Yes. In the next two episodes, we're going to talk about building from character or building from a plot and how do you fill in those in-between moments so that it makes everything, you keep your pacing steady and it makes everything feel very cohesive.
Right, because if the girl goes home with her coffee-stained shirt and all of a sudden she sits down in a chair and starts thinking about when she was five and how her grandmother used to make really good coffee, your pacing is screwed. Unless there's a really good reason why we need to know that.
Yes.
So
Yes.
we'll get into more of that as we move forward through this Where Do I Start series.
And so we have some suggestions for craft books. If you are very much just starting out, or if you've been writing for a little bit and you seem to be struggling, sometimes these can kickstart things for you a little bit. So you already talked about one.
Romancing the Beat, Gwen Hayes, we talk about it a lot. I love that book.
Yes. The I will say I do love Romancing the Beat. I feel like it needs to be paired with some basic story structure beats sometimes too, because it is basically your romance beats. And so if you're writing a story that has another theme to it, or if you're writing in another genre, like if you're writing a romantic suspense, then you've got to kind of mesh those two together to make sure the suspense part of your story still moves along at the pace it should.
Right. I actually used Romancing the Beat and built in a couple other avenues when I put together our course. I think it's called Plotting the Perfect Romance or Plot the Perfect Romance. So if you're interested in alternate ways that are very similar to Romancing the Beat but have a little bit more flexibility, then you could go look at that course.
Yes, Nancy's got a great course on that. And then everybody talks about Save the Cat.
Yes.
And again, if we're talking to people who are brand new from writing, the title's a little odd.
I have always been like, what cat?
Well, it's based on the idea that you have the moment that you know this character is a good person. And so it cites a movie that I suddenly cannot remember, but there's a moment in a movie where this person is being chased and has to flee very quickly, and they take a moment to rescue a cat instead of just leaving the cat to like explode when the apartment explodes or whatever. And so that tells you as the reader, and because it's a movie, as a viewer, that this person's going to be a good guy.
Got it. Okay. Save the cat.
And they have a whole, like, they have Save the Cat writes a novel, Save the Cat goes to the movies, Save the Cat goes indie. So that is expanded. And they have a great website that if you're not into reading the book, it's got the beat sheet explained. It's got examples. So it's a good place to find a lot of resources.
Yeah. And while all of these are great books, there are so many resources online. If you just search beat sheets for name your genre, you will get hours of material.
Tons of stuff. And then two of my other favorites, Save the Cat is good. Save the Cat never quite clicked for me for a while, especially when I was writing. It has since I've become an editor. But when I was very, very first starting out, I kind of got overwhelmed by it. And so that's okay if it doesn't immediately speak your language. Because two that did speak my language is James Scott Bell. And he has a plot and structure, and then he has another one that I love called Writing Your Novel from the Middle. And that takes that midpoint that we talked about that is my favorite thing, and you build from there. But he lays out very basic, here is what an inciting incident looks like, here is what your turning points look like. And so that's another good resource there.
Well, I want to add, do not feel bad if you need to read all of these books, or if you need to hear this 9 times before it clicks. I saw James Scott Bell speak at the very first writer's conference I ever went when I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. And he gave a great talk and it was very inspiring. It didn't mean anything to me. I had nothing to attach it to. And I think he was talking about Writing from the Middle because I think that book had recently come out. But take the time that you need to, and I'm a slow learner, but absorb the information and don't worry if it seems like everyone else knows what they're talking about. Just
because they're faking it. they're pretending. It's fine. Well, and it's okay to Frankenstein it. It's okay to pull, like, these beats work for the romance side, so I'm gonna use romancing the beat for that. And I totally understand this part out of Save the Cat and this part out of Plotting from the Middle. And it's okay to pull that all together to form your own process because the beats are going to pretty much line up.
Right.
And so you've got to take what speaks to you.
Definitely. And then the last one you have on your list is Jane Cleland.
Yes. I think she lays it out in very plain language and gives like some actually actionable.
Yeah.
Like, I can apply this right now type strategies. And so that book I think is very well done.
And I think that's a pretty good wrap up of where to begin with story structure. It's definitely not comprehensive because we could talk for days.
Yes. Well, and like we said, we do have previous episodes that cover each of these things. And then also you have your class and that it's available on Teachable, and we can put a link to that. And we are always open to hearing about new craft books, too. So if you know of one that you're like, oh, this one really spoke to me, hit us up on social media and tell us that, because I will totally read them just to see.
Yeah. Well, and there are so many new good craft books, like the Theodora Taylor book.
Yes.
That you worked on, right?
I did. And it's awesome. And everybody should read it, especially if you're writing romance, 7-figure fiction.
I have it just laying around here somewhere, but I don't know where I put it. Yes. So the ones that we recommended today were specific to story structure, but we love hearing about new craft books. And we will be back in February. And what are we going to talk about then?
In February, we have 2 shows because we're still working on beginnings and how do you start. And so one of those shows will be focused on if you have come up with these characters, how do you build out your story strictly from the characters? and what do you need to explore with them? How do you give them a plot? That kind of thing. And then the other show is going to be the opposite of that, of what if you have a plot? What if you have a great idea for an event? How do you pick the right characters to put into that? And how do you make sure that the plot is strong enough to carry the entire story?
Fun. Okay.
And in between there, you should come visit us in all the places. We have the Story Strategy Saloon. We have Evident Ink Instagram. And we have our Facebook page. So feel free to come talk to us. Oh, and we have Pinterest. Yes. How did I forget about Pinterest? It's my favorite place to play.
We have a new website, too, which I think is a little bit more straightforward in terms of services. And if you go to the website, you'll see there's a marketing consultation tab, because we always talk about looking at your comps, figuring out who your comp authors are, comp titles. And sometimes I wonder if that is maybe not as straightforward as we think it is. So that's actually a service that we offer, and we can help you figure out where you fit in the market and where your best shot at selling your book will be based on competitive information. So take a look and feel free to reach out to us anytime. You know where to find us. We'll see you again in February.
You can find story writing tips, tricks, coaching, and courses at our site, www.evidentinc.com. Get live feedback in our writing community at Facebook at facebook.com/evidentinc, and find past episodes of Story Strategy at our YouTube channel. Story powers the world, and we can't wait to help you tell yours.